Welcome to the Andy Social Podcast. My name is Andy Dowling, and a big welcome to everybody that is coming back to tune in to this podcast. It's been a little bit of time in between episodes, and I'm doing my best to play a bit of catch up now. Unfortunately, life gets in the way. Fortunately and unfortunately, lots of good things happening. I've got a wedding that's coming up very soon in a matter of weeks, and I've been doing a lot of prep work in regards to that, and I'll touch on that a little bit later. I've got a trip to the US with the band. We're playing Prog Power USA in Atlanta. So we've been going through the convoluted and complex and very annoying visa process. So that's been taking up a bit of time and getting all the final little things organized for that trip. And there's also my honeymoon as well, which will be going for a number of weeks in Europe. So I've been trying to get things planned in advance. So like anything, as soon as you start focusing your attention in one particular area, other areas tend to get neglected. And the podcast, unfortunately, was a victim in this circumstance. So throughout July, it was very quiet, but I'm hoping that I can record quite a few episodes before things get even crazier. So at least then over the next couple of months, there'll be a constant stream of episodes coming out for you guys, because I definitely don't want to leave this sit for too long without any new updates. There's heaps of great conversations and things that I've been wanting to do, and it's just a case now that I need to put a bit of focus over the next however many days, the next couple of weeks, to really nut out as many as I can. So quickly before we get into the episode itself, I've got the Amazon portal link for you guys to check out if you want to support the podcast directly. What that is, for anybody who's not aware, is if you do shop on Amazon.com, but instead of going to Amazon.com and typing that in, use the portal link on my website, which is andysocial.net. You shop as per normal. It's just that you click on a unique link from my website. And what that does is that I get a small percentage of what you guys spend from Amazon as a thank you for referring traffic to them. And that money goes directly back into maintaining this podcast and my video blog and everything else that I'm doing creatively to try and push all these things that I'm involved with. And the project seemed to increase with volume and size, and I'm doing my best not to get too carried away. But those small things that don't cost you anything more have a dramatic impact on what I'm doing and help self-fund the podcast itself. So if you want, you can go to andysocial.net and click on the Amazon portal link there. Alternatively, you can be very smart and do a right click on the Amazon portal link and save that link and bookmark it in your browser so that you don't have to keep going to my website every time to shop on Amazon. As I said before, the shopping experience is exactly the same. It's just that you're clicking on a slightly different link. So go to andysocial.net and you can check that out there, and that'll be a massive help for me. Now, I'll leave all the rest of the housekeeping work for the end of it, but I'll jump straight into the episode itself. This one is with a friend of mine from a long way back called Josh. Josh Thompson is a drummer. He's a musician. We met years and years ago when our bands played together. His band, Subrusion, based in a rural town for the people that aren't Australian, called Wagga Wagga. And we sort of lost contact over the years, and I've been keeping up to date just of late as to what he's been doing over the last couple of years, pushing this thing called The Busker's Guide. Him and his friend George have been traveling all over the world and at the moment across Australia, and he's done it a few times now, basically exploring the country and the world through busking and finding ways to be resourceful and economic and basically playing for a place to stay. Playing for something to eat, and just trying to find the best ways possible to travel and experience their surroundings without spending too much money. This is a really inspiring episode for me personally, because it just shows that there are so many different ways of living, and you don't have to follow the old well-worn path when it comes to traveling or just living your life. I mean, Josh and his friend George are doing amazing things, and the amount of ideas that they have and the things that they want to do in the future as well is just so exciting. And even while we're talking, I was thinking of all these crazy things that they could do, which would just go so well for them. And I'll have to harass them both and give them my ideas, which I'm sure they really want to hear, but I'll pass it through regardless. these guys have done so much over the last couple of years, and there's more to this than just busking. So if busking isn't anything of interest to you, definitely look at this from a different perspective. This is about getting some life experience, getting out there and seeing that there are definitely more ways than one to explore the world and travel without remortgaging your house or taking out a hefty loan from the bank. It can be done on a shoestring budget. It's not always glamorous, but the results of doing this and the rewards that can come from this are just so amazing. And I'll certainly let Josh go through this and explain a lot more to it. I'll be putting links in the show notes over at andysocial.net, and you should be able to click on them through the podcast iTunes app as well. So please reach out to Josh and George and let them know what you think. There's so many things that they're doing at the moment, creating resources for many other people, just in a way to help and guide other people with what they want to do as far as traveling goes. It's just an amazing thing that they're doing, and I'm certainly not doing it justice with this explanation, so I'll let you guys take what you can from this conversation. So enough rambling from me, as you guys are all well and truly used to. And here's our conversation with Josh.
Hello.
Hello. How are you going?
Andy, good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Very good. You're all comfortable, ready to rock?
Yeah, man. Got a coffee in hand, just kicking back.
Nice one. How was the show last night?
Yeah, it was pretty good. Like, it was just a classic Darwin pub show. We got an agent up here that's helping us book gigs just to help bank some more money, because it's so hard to save busking. And so we're just playing at like all these, the ALH pubs.
Yeah.
So they're all owned by Woolies.
Yeah.
So usually they're pretty damn vibeless and characterless. So, but you know, you get some pretty cool people in and then you don't get some pretty cool people in. So it was pretty fun to play, but you know, you just get a mix of people that are, you know, it's just one of those. It's more like a work than a gig, I guess.
Yeah,
for me.
You just gotta get through it, I guess. It's no doubt there's a lot of characters there.
Yeah, you just gotta, and it's like every cover band in Australia is playing the same set in every pub every night. You know, it's just like the classic requests, like K-San and all those kind of songs. And we try not to do those songs. We try to do like a nice mix of, we have this thing where we try and learn the second most popular song of every band, just because everyone's hearing the same songs, but everyone wants to hear the same songs every night. So, you know, it's pretty funny.
That's funny because, I mean, you would think from it's really the demographic of people that are asking for it, but you would think most people would be sick of hearing the same thing over and over again. But it's funny because a lot of, I mean, especially when you look at the more metro areas, like, you know, Sydney and Melbourne and whatnot, and that sort of cover circuit, those guys make a shitload of money and they're playing the same songs over and over again. But every time I've been in pubs before where, you know, the stock standard cover set list gets rolled out and I'm sitting there watching the band play and the crowd still goes nuts. But I guess after so many drinks, I mean, I think people don't really care what's being played, and if they can remember a song and the lyrics, then they'll at least sing the chorus, and that's about as...
Yeah, full on, man, full
yeah,
on.
Yeah.
You would think they'd get sick of it, but I guess that's the beauty of music. You can just kind of enjoy... It's that familiarity that it's the association you have with the song that makes you like it. Like, you like the melody and everything else, but, you know, you've always got good memories with good songs, or, you know, what you would deem as a good song, as everyone believes they have the best taste in music. So,
I remember going and seeing one band a while back who was like an 80s rock and metal tribute band, and they actually had like a really good set. But what they tried to do, and they're trying to be smart about it, is just every four or five songs sneak in an original song. But it just never works because as soon as their original song came in, the crowd sort of looked at each other and then they walked off to the bar or to the toilet or whatever, and it was like their intermission to go and have a break. And the band's just playing to like three people. But as soon as the next popular song kicked in, it was a Poison cover or something like that, everyone's back up the front and there's a couple of other people rocking out.
Yeah, so they broke that momentum.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, funny. We've had a few requests for originals, which is pretty cool. But,
oh, yeah, cool.
Our originals are pretty far from being what you would call an Aussie pub rock song. So,
And I guess with a lot of these places, the people that are going there aren't there to really sort of discover or really overthink things as well. It's more to let loose and just, you know, not think about it too much, and that's about it. So
absolutely.
And Darwin, I mean, we've been up there a few times to play, and it's certainly an interesting spot.
I've seen hits of posts over the years from you Lord boys coming up to Darwin, and I've never played here in like original metal band, but I always kind of wondered how it'd go because I knew heavy metal was really big in some communities in the Western Australia and Northern Territory, but where do you guys play when you're coming?
Yeah, we've played a couple of places. There's one place just down the end of, I can't remember the main road in the main strip in Darwin. I think it's Mitchell Street.
Yeah.
So down one end is there's like a little cultural center called Brownsmart, I think. And they have a little theater there where they usually do plays and whatnot. And there's a stage in there, and we played in there. And then next door to that is a little community youth center. It's really, really tiny, and that's called Happy Yass. So we played both of those places on the two occasions that we've been up there to play. And, there's definitely a healthy scene of young people liking metal and just music in general, because I think it's one of those places, and you would have seen it where you're playing in the more rural areas, there's that segregation over tastes in music isn't really there. You know, people are just excited to see somebody come to town and play. So people will come out out of curiosity and just have a great time. So as opposed to like, you know, playing in Melbourne or Sydney or Brisbane where you've got the people that just like a particular niche genre of metal and stick to that.
Yeah, man.
And you got to try and bridge those worlds.
I think it's the most subdivided genre, right? Metal. Bloody hell.
It is.
And it's fans.
It is. And you're trying to branch out into even the rock crowds and whatever, but you've got to try and get over the first hurdles of just the metal scene itself. So there's definitely challenges. But Darwin's been great for us, and it's there's some really cool people up there, and unless you're doing a long tour which involves, you know, going on the road and driving and playing all the places in between, it can be quite an expensive venture just to go up there and play that alone.
Yeah, man.
But
full on.
Yeah. So we stayed in Mitchell Street both times, and you know, it's a raging place. As the clash of different worlds between the local army guys.
Just the locals.
Yeah. So it's and so many tourist backpackers there as well. It's such a it's insane. So when you mentioned last night that you're up there and you're playing a set, and I thought, oh, I was just envisioning just walking down the main drag there and all the pubs and clubs and people falling out and falling over on the road and getting into fist fights and the cops are driving up and down the street. I'm not painting a very nice picture of Darwin at night, but
but it's pretty accurate nonetheless.
Yeah.
We did some busking on Mitchell Street, which you're not allowed to do, and the police ended up stopping us. But we saw the exact same thing on Mitchell Street, and the Darwin permit system here is really shit for busking. So they give out 3 permits a day, right? Mm. And if you're in a trio, that's the 3 permits taken for the whole city for the day.
Oh, wow, far out.
And you can only busk in, you know, that little mall that they have there
that back area that's dead all the time?
Yeah. So you're only allowed to busk there unamplified.
Oh.
Which, like, you would be flat out competing with the noisy environment.
Yeah.
We had a busk on Mitchell Street late at night because we saw that everyone was just out and they just pushing people out of clubs and people going in and everyone's drunk. And we only got through about 4 songs and the cops came and stopped us and told us what we're doing is illegal. But those 4 songs that we played, man, people weren't pushing, people weren't yelling, people weren't being rat bags. You know, everyone was just chilling and enjoying it. And it was like really calm for a little while and it was really cool. But they ended up stopping us. And it's pretty regulated here. I thought the territory was all cowboys and stuff, but we were just practicing music because it's so hard to rehearse anywhere when you're traveling, especially hostels. And we were rehearsing music in the, you know, the park they have with that big walkway next to Mitchell Street.
Mm-hmm.
And some rangers pulled up and asked us if we had a permit. And we said, we're not soliciting any money. That's just us to here practicing to ourselves, literally just sitting under a tree and playing guitar. And he said that we needed to ring the council to see if we needed a permit. So I rang the council and I said, do I need a permit to sit under a tree in your park and play the guitar? And they're like, no, why would you need a permit? I'm like, what? Your rangers are telling me that I might. But, yeah, it's just, it seems like not many people know what's going on, but they know some rules, and, yeah, it's just crazy, man. So this time around, instead of staying at a hostel for a month like we did last time, because Mitchell Street's just off its head, and it's really hard to stay productive there. We, for the first time in 2 years, we're actually paying for accommodation, but we've got, like, a little two-bedroom granny flat where we can just hide from all that kind of Darwin ruckus and try and be productive and edit footage and write tracks and do some gaming.
That's cool. And it must be for, I mean, for you guys over the last few weeks to hit a larger area of civilization must be, there must be some release in that aspect and the fact that you're, I mean, how long are you going to be in Darwin for?
So we're in Darwin for 3 weeks.
Okay.
Three more weeks. So we're here for a month. Yeah. And then we'll drive back down to Perth.
Yeah, cool. So it must be, I mean, I've been watching a little bit, little bits and pieces of over the last, you know, however many weeks that you guys have been travelling, and just, you know, I mean, the whole thing that you guys are doing is about just being really resourceful and finding basically whatever spare change and opportunities to keep you guys going, whatever's available you guys are taking with both hands. And to get to Darwin now where there's obviously a bit more stability and you're in the one spot for a while must be a huge relief just on its own.
Yeah, full on. Some nights you don't know where you're staying and you're just kind of driving on a highway until there's too many kangaroos on the road and you pull over and set up a tent. It's pretty good. It's the cities are good. But sometimes even being out remote, it really spurs you to be super creative because you don't have the Wi-Fi and stuff, so you just pull over and have a bit of a jam in a car park.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Do you want to quickly run through what the Busker's Guide's all about?
Yeah, so essentially the Busker's Guide is, in its most simplest form, two guys who gave up their day jobs, decided to busk to earn money to travel. And the reason why we chose busking is, I guess, because music's something we all enjoy and can get into, but it's something that we can pick up and put down anywhere we stop. So the idea was to, since we didn't have any capital, we just make money everywhere that we stop. And turns out that's a lot harder than than you think it would be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, I've been quite excited to have a chat to you for a while because that whole concept of, I mean, putting the specifics of busking aside, just the fact of wanting to travel and trying to find a creative way of doing it is just so intriguing, and especially now where a lot of people are starting to get a bit stale in their office jobs and, you know, hard labour jobs, working crazy hours a week, and everyone just is trying to find an escape. I mean, what you guys have done is you've completely, I mean, at least from the outside looking in, it looks like you guys have just broken out of your comfort zones and just gone, you know what, let's just go for it and just see what happens. And, you know, for the amount of time that you guys have been away and travelled and whatnot on almost virtually nothing and then just used whatever resources you guys have had and talent that you've had. And you've even admitted, like, along the way that, you know, you guys, from a musical point of view, didn't think that you guys would crash hot to begin with either.
But you've, definitely not.
But you've used what you do have to make something of it, and it's just amazing, like, what you guys have been able to do over, you know, a relatively short space of time.
Yeah. Cheers, man. It was really, really funny for me because I come from a drumming background where I played, you know, prog rock / metal in country towns, which is a bit of a slog on its own. Mm. And then I moved to Melbourne and was working bar jobs, and I guess I wanted to travel always, but I wanted to do it as a musician, and I guess that's where my priorities were wrong, because there's a million musicians out there trying to be the best musician to create that travel, you know, that the need to go and do shows and the ability to sustain yourself from being at a certain position in a musical career to make travel viable. Because who doesn't want to play music whenever they travel? And yeah. I guess I kind of thought, you know what, maybe I should just reverse the two, because Why do I have to confine myself to a stage? Why do I have to say, oh, I can only play here if this and this has been checked off the list and I'm happy and I'm safe and I'm a well-fed boy? And, we left as a music duo that knew three songs. We weren't singers. We'd never really sung before. I was a drummer, so I kind of, for a while, I was actually playing the empty hard case for the guitar with sticks and a microphone in it until I discovered the cajon. George knew a few chords and he had some lessons in high school from guitar, but anybody that watches this that plays music, I can guarantee would have a much easier time because they already play music. We just kind of started from scratch apart from, you know, the little bits and pieces he knew before, but even on that level, I needed to reinvent how I played because going from kit to cajon, and the cajon looks easy, and it's just a couple of sounds compared to a kit, but you were reassigning your limbs' functions, so that took a bit to get my head around, and to find a way to complement a completely new style of music that I'd never really spent much time playing. I guess I had to start thinking differently, and I actually found that it's made me 100 times better as a musician because now I'm playing the cajon. I've got a little keyboard that I set up and play. I'm doing the harmonica. I just bought a ukulele and I'm introducing all these things to my ability that before I never would have even considered because I was really fulfilled just being a metal drummer.
Yeah, and I think I assume that you just understand music better in a general sense where, you know what works and what doesn't. And I hear exactly what you're saying coming from like a full band background and playing a particular style of music. You can get very good at doing one particular thing, but if any of those elements slightly change, then it can throw you off considerably. So for you guys and especially rocking up to a different place each time where there'd be certain things that you can't use and certain things that you can use, and then you might have to change the type of music that you're playing a little bit, or you've always got to adapt even just in a general logistics way of getting around the country. Obviously, just from a mental point of view, just opening your mind up and just understanding what works in a song and structure and having to adapt it to a very limited set of people and instruments being used. It's I can totally see how you'd be a much better musician.
Yeah, and even learning to sing, my God, that is the hardest thing of them all.
Yeah.
That is the hardest thing in the world, and that's what you've carried with you your entire life. You know, that a voice, and if you haven't spent a bit of time trying to figure it out, jumping straight into it, I still hate listening to myself. I mean, like, do you ever get used to listening to yourself? Wow. Lucky George is a really quick learner. And he does the bulk of the singing, and I'm on just the, what I would, I guess, try and pass off as harmonies.
Do you find it, I mean, the challenges that you got around singing, is it a combination of, you know, the actual physical talent of doing the singing, or is it more of a case of being in front of other people in a very stripped back sense where you, I mean, from my point of view, I'd be feeling extremely vulnerable because you've got people watching you. You don't have a lot of amplification that can sometimes mask a lot of that. And maybe even just that inner judgment of thinking that people are judging you from as soon as you open your mouth. Is there an element of that, or is it more of a case of just the physical challenges of just being able to sing?
It's pretty funny that you mentioned the second one. It's definitely, I guess, a combination of the both, but now that you've said it, it's definitely more the second one as well.
Yeah.
So rehearsing has been one of the biggest challenges for us. On top of building the website, the resource, the Busker's Guide, filming and editing all the footage, plus the other little odd jobs we take on as filmmakers on the road, rehearsing in a space that, rehearsing for me is intentionally sounding bad until you get that bad sound good. And it's really hard to do that in a space that doesn't offend a lot of people.
Mm.
So because we're mostly in hostels and stuff like that, I can kind of sit and run through scales, you know, in my head voice, but, you know, you need to practice how you would play some of the time. That's why we head out to parks and things like that to just try and make a whole bunch of bad sounds till we figure our voices out. But sitting in front of people, even if I've been doing, you know, trying to do vocal warm-ups for an hour or two, and then sitting in front of people and being completely exposed, as you say, I've gone from the very back of the stage behind four musos standing in front of me, not singing. And you remember Chanel, the singer from the old band Subversion, man, the guy can sing. He's singing opera now.
Yeah.
So so, like, that was always my reference point of, God, that's what a singer is.
Yeah.
And I definitely don't compare myself to him now, because you shouldn't really compare yourself to other musicians in that sense, what you get out of yourself. But being in front of people and singing, I've never felt more naked on stage. And that, for some reason, really bothers me. And I've been able to do it and pass it off for 2 years now, even at the worst of the worst. And I'm a lot better than what I was when I started. But you know what it's like being a creative, man. You know, you're your own biggest critic. So I just guess, makes me nervous singing. I would never sing on my own, still, never. I'm happy to do harmonies and hide there until I can grow what I need to maybe sing on my own.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact that you've been able to come as far as you have to this point from where you were, you know, a couple of years ago, I mean, there's nothing stopping you from getting to that point where you can just sing on your own in, you know, 6 months' time, 12 months' time, a couple of years' time, or whatever it might be, because you're going in the right direction. But it's, I mean, whenever I have those horrible reoccurring nightmares, it's always about being on stage and suddenly the band disappears and I'm left by myself and everyone's just watching me and I'm like, oh, what do I do now? Or suddenly, like, everyone else's microphones turn off and I'm the only one singing and everyone's just looking at me like, oh, God. So I get that sort of feeling no doubt you've both had to go through over the last couple of years of travelling around the place. But I'm sure, like, personally, it must be just so rewarding and probably character building for you guys, because, I mean, just singing aside, for you guys to rock up in a different place all the time, there's some things that you're organising in advance, but in a lot of places you guys are more or less negotiating and trying to pitch an idea to somebody from scratch. So you guys have really got I'm sure you guys have got great people skills now for developing relationships and rapport and getting along with people.
Yeah, that's been even quite a journey in itself. That's something that I'd never really done, is that approach and negotiating to get what I needed. We kind of just started out. We paid for our first lot of accommodation when we weren't couch surfing in Sydney, and that was only for two nights, and we swore to ourselves after that, let's not pay for accommodation again, because busking is a great way to kind of cover costs, but it's definitely not a great way to save money or get any capital, especially if you have one of the world's most progressive costs, and that's sleeping somehow. Sleeping's really expensive. So we ended up, first off, just emailing out a bunch of hostels, and we didn't get any in Sydney. So we got one in Newcastle. So we head north to Newcastle, and we said, can we make you a video for your hostel, a promo video in return for some accommodation? And they're like, that's all cool. They said, you know, we'll play some music in between because it's good practice, and it's really cool playing in hostels because it's all international audience. So there's couches for you to sleep on whenever you go to wherever they're from. And that kind of got the ball rolling for the whole East Coast, where we were predominantly living off making videos for businesses in return for what we wanted. So in Noosa, we made a video for a cafe for breakfast and coffee. We also made a video for the hostel there for our beds. And then they sent us to Fraser Island for free, where we made a video for one of the tour companies.
Wow.
And we got pretty good at you know, selling videos and stuff, but videos are so time intensive and, you know, you got to try and get all the shots. And our videos are pretty organic anyway. We try not to set up a lot of shots. I like to think of our videos are a good representation of what it actually is, not one of those videos that's trying to sell you the world when really, you know, they've got whatever. And but rocking up into new towns where we haven't been able to get accommodation, we've literally just walked into a pub and said, hey, do you guys have any music? If you don't, can we play here tonight for a bed? And surprisingly, that actually works a fair bit.
Yeah, right.
Like walking in off the street, the Mount Gambier at a place called, I can't remember exactly what the pub's called, Commerce. I remember walking in there, and we'd walked up to Mount Gambier. We were pretty damn broke. It was Easter the next day, so nothing was open, but we didn't even know that, because you don't really have a reference of date or time or day when you're just doing this. And I walked in. I said, can we stay for a bed? And they're like, yeah, that's all cool. They fed us, gave us beers, gave us a bed. We paid a 2-hour set, which was shit because we were shit. But they smiled and laughed anyway. And the next day was Easter, so everything was closed, but we'd forgotten. So there was nothing we could have done anyway. There was no shops open. But yeah. They gave us an extra night accommodation, and then they invited us to their staff party at the bolo that they were having that day, which was all free food and alcohol. We ended up just playing lawn bowls and getting drunk with these people that we just met the day before. And they're like, yeah, come play some music on the green. So we went and got the staff and played music. And, you know, we were still as bad as we were yesterday. But it didn't matter.
Yeah.
And that was a really cool thing. And then one of the staff members had a house party afterwards. And I got a drunk haircut for free. And it was really cool because we met this one family that were doing what we were doing, but just without the music. They had two kids. And every 6 months when it gets to the school holidays, they move towns and they just kind of inch their way around Australia. And that's a family that kind of, the husband was saying that he packed up his job and he had a big corporate job, but he just got sick of that grind, it wears you down. And he said now they travel and they've been doing it for 2 years, just inching around the country. And he's like, I love it. I wish we had done it sooner. So, yeah, you do end up just having some pretty random times that just come out of a simple question. And I guess that the ability not to shoot yourself down thinking, oh, there's no way that someone's going to come and say yes to this question because it's just so left and center. But yeah, like when it does happen, it definitely pays dividends.
It's one thing that I've certainly, I probably over the last couple of years, begun to realize a lot more is just it. I mean, the old cliche of it doesn't hurt to ask, but you sort of don't really think about what that actually means. And for the most part, it really doesn't. I mean, in most cases, you've got nothing to lose. And as you said before, like it's, you've got to get past the, you know, the internal, you know, negative sort of dismissal and thinking, oh, well, there's no point asking because this is what the outcome's going to be when you don't actually know whether that's going to be the case or not.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it must be, I mean, it would have been initially a big sort of comfort zone thing to be just going out of your way just to ask people off the cuff and see what they can do to help. But as you said, I mean, it does pay off at times, and it's certainly done a great deal for you guys over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and like it definitely was. It felt like a massive hurdle, and it even resurfaces now occasionally when I think to ask somebody or anybody something, and I think, oh, who would say yes to that? And then sometimes I think, well, if someone asked me, even if I couldn't say yes, I would probably try and help that person by finding someone that I knew that would. And I think, well, I'm like a lot of my friends because they're my friends, so I guess there is someone out there that's going to say yes. It's just hard to not be disheartened sometimes when you get a flat out no.
Yeah.
You know, and no, it feels so negative, but you shouldn't take that in. And it's hard. It's hard not to, because sometimes you're really invested in what you're asking. Like what you're asking is the difference between full bellies in a warm bed or cold baked beans sleeping in the front seat of the car reclined down.
And I guess that's something that you have to go through in advance as well. I mean, I've always done that when I've had to. I've felt that I've been a little bit vulnerable and I've gone to ask somebody for help or advice or something that might, in my mind, think that I'm asking someone to overcommit, but I always think, well, what's the worst case scenario? And usually the worst case scenario is a no. And when that no surfaces, then usually there's another solution. It might not be the best solution, but I always take it to the extreme and think, well, am I going to die by asking that question?
Dude, I think the exact same thing. Is this going to kill me? No, then fuck it.
Just go for it. Go for
sorry,
it.
Sorry, oh, can I swear? Sorry.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so it's funny though, because I don't think we give ourselves an opportunity to even get to that point of asking, like speaking to ourselves like that and thinking, well, really, what's going to happen? Is the world going to fall apart? Are we going to die if we do that, to make that action or ask that question or whatever it is? And then, you know, 9 times out of 10, nothing bad is going to happen. It might just mean that you're left with nothing, but in most cases, you've got nothing to begin with. So it's better to give a shot.
And this just isn't situational to us. Like, every man would come across this problem pretty often, every woman, every person. And I think it's like we've kind of lost our sense of community along the way as people, you know. I feel like as I travel and as I meet people from all over the world in different parts of the world, I'm like, we are so alike. You're just like my friend here and you're just like my friend here, and you're awesome and you're awesome, and we are so alike wherever I go. But there's this inbuilt fear, and I don't know where it's come from, but it's like you can't talk or ask somebody for something. And it's what you said, it's that feeling of vulnerability. And it's like, why can't we feel vulnerable all of a sudden? It's not like we're living in the ages where we got to worry about our prey attacking us from behind, otherwise we don't, you know, and going out and killing something to eat, because that's what we need to do to survive. And, you know, we're beyond that. So, but it feels bad. Like, it feels like you can't be vulnerable. And I think you should explore your vulnerabilities, I guess, and get over that. I think that's a really important part of development.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, this always pops up in conversation, but, you know, just the fact that most people now, and especially the next generation with their heads in phones and on computer screens and whatnot, it's just that social interaction of standing in front of someone face to face is so much more difficult than it probably was 20 years ago. And, you know, so the common social skills that most people should have aren't as evident now, because people just aren't communicating the way that they used to. So, I mean, I see it all the time, and I've experienced it myself, especially for a long time, and probably up until I started the podcast. You know, if someone's calling me, I would just ignore the phone call, and then I'd send a message later on and say, hey, what's up? And just hoping that they send a text message back, because I just don't want to, I would feel that if I was talking to them, I would feel that if I'm talking to them on the phone, that I'd be too vulnerable and I would probably agree to doing something that I don't want to do, or I'd be put on the spot and I'd have to make up an excuse for something. And it was just, but there were silly little things, and as a result, I was disconnecting myself more and more from other people. And it's really funny, because for me, that's just being in front of a computer for too long, or in front of my phone for too long, tapping away on the screen and communicating with people that way. And as soon as even going out and seeing people, I had to be drunk to get along with people and talk to people, because that was the easiest way to get over the nerves of having a face-to-face conversation with people. And it's just crazy. So it's interesting that you mentioned it.
Yeah, and it seems like a more and more common rhetoric. Like, it's pretty true. I scroll on 9Gag occasionally. I don't know if you know what that is.
It's a
meme site. And everyone's always carrying on how they're an introvert. Well, I think there's elements of being an introvert in a lot of people, but scrolling and then making a meme about it is like a way of... That's their release, and saying, oh, you know, it's not my fault, I'm an introvert, everyone's just shit. No, you're contributing to the overall shit by not being out there and understanding yourself, let alone understanding everybody else. People can be frustrating, but who cares? You know, there's nothing that you can say or do that's going to change it. And definitely locking yourself away and losing those really important social skills that you need to get just about everything you need out of life, You put yourself at a really big disadvantage. But I guess that's kind of the whole, I guess we're in a bit of a funny state at the moment where everything's always someone else's fault, you know. I feel like fewer and fewer people take responsibility for things, and it's much easier just to chuck it online and say, you know, one of those passive-aggressive posts that doesn't name anybody, or that, you know, you always just assume someone's at fault when you read it, except for the poster.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just too easy. It's too easy for people to tap something away, press send or post or whatever, and then walk away from it, and you know, without any consequences of standing in front of somebody and waiting for the reaction. So it's always, you know, the old term, the keyboard warrior. So you can belittle someone and challenge someone online, but not see that person's instant reaction face to face. But if those two people were in front of each other, it would be a completely different conversation. But,
different exchange altogether.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But, I mean, that's what I see, that's what I love about what you and George have been doing, is that, I mean, obviously there's a massive element of it just being busking, and you guys are creating a resource for other people to do the same thing as what you guys are doing. But, I mean, there's such a bigger story behind it and there's a bigger learning behind it, or so many learnings of just getting out there and interacting with people on just a face-to-face, one-on-one human level, which is, it sounds so silly to say, but it's just, it's becoming more and more foreign. It's becoming more and more unique. And I mean, everything goes in circles, or cycles, I should say, and people will begin to find this aspect of living a bit of a novelty, and it'll start to come back and people will be searching for this human interaction again, whereas at the moment a lot of people are still so stuck in that virtual world. But I love what you guys are doing, in the sense that there's just so many possibilities for you guys in the future.
Yeah, cheers, man.
Yeah.
We do meet a lot of people that say, oh, what you're doing, you know, you're so lucky or you're so talented. And the whole point of filming everything from day one was to show people how talented we weren't.
Mm.
You know, it's and building the resource, we thought, well, how do you go busking around the world? Surely there's someone that's doing it already, that's writing all the cool stuff down that other people can use. And we found a lot of people were using music to travel. It's definitely not new. And we found there was a ton of music blogs and there was a ton of travel blogs. But there was nothing that really tied the two together. Because you know what creative people are like. If you get a few good leads, some of the people feel reluctant to share that information because it might it might stop their income, their revenue stream, or you know. And I think that's a really sad thing in the creative industry. I can understand wanting to eat and survive and pay the bills, but we just thought, all right, cool. Let's just make a resource that is for not just buskers, but just for anybody that's creative and wants to use that creativeness to travel. So what we started doing was writing down all the cool places that we busked. And then looking online, we found that there's no set permit system for Australia. So not only do they change from town to city to town to city, but they also change in between councils of towns.
Mm.
So you could be in Perth City where you have to have a permit, which is, I think they're pretty cheap. It's like $30 for a month or 3 months, and you can busk anywhere in Perth. And you take one step to the left and you're in Leederville, and they don't require a permit at all.
Mm.
So we found that really strange, that there was no real base people would go to online to just sift through busking permits and regulations. So we started trying to build that. I'm not going to say we started building that because we're still in that process. I don't want to mislead anybody saying we're the be all and end all of resources for buskers. But we thought, cool, all right, we'll start doing that. Hey, we might as well start writing down all the best places to eat for, you know, next to nothing, or at least the places you can pay for food. And then that kind of extended to what we'd already been doing, which is the pay to stay. And this is a really cool thing that we're super proud of, but we were making lots of videos for Nomad's Hostels. They were so cool and they were always happy to have us in return for a video and for some music. And then as we were progressing, just for music. But their marketing crew kind of was seeing all these videos popping up for Nomad's Hostels, thinking, who the hell's making all these videos? Because we're not. And it's awesome. So we got into contact with them and had a chat. And they're a really cool non-top-heavy company, which is, you know, really refreshing, because you can approach them how we're approaching each other now. They're open to this kind of conversation. And we have this really cool idea called Pay to Stay. And essentially, there's an email address now called buskers@nomadsworld.com. And any busker, any musician from anywhere, can find a Nomad's Hostel and send that email address, an email saying, hi, this is me, this is what I do, here's some example of what I do. And they can apply to pay for their bed all over Australia.
That's cool.
Nomad's just bought X-Base backpackers, which almost doubles their body, how many backpackers they have. So now here's something that not just buskers that are traveling nomads, like you could use touring musicians around Australia. You could be a fire twirler. You could be an acro yoga instructor. You can be, you know, whatever you are, an interpretive dancer. Like, it'd be a hard slog, but, you know, it's still open to them.
Yeah.
But you can apply to pay for your bed. And, like, one thing that I always found, as you would find, it's hard moving a lot of cogs in a band to get them from A, B to C without spending a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, this is probably a pretty cool way for a lot of musos to maybe, you know, I'm not saying you should pack up your stuff and live your life as a nomad and play music because it's a happy-go-lucky world. But hey, if this can turn zero tours a year into one mini tour a year, then like that's really cool. That's getting more music out there. That's putting more music in more places. That's giving musicians an opportunity to play to that international audience at a backpacker. They usually don't have money to buy CDs, but who cares?
Yeah.
You know, you're getting a bed and then you can go do your show the next day or later on that night.
Yeah, absolutely. And it depends on what the purpose is and what you're trying to achieve. And I think it's just such a healthy thing to have for people that are creative and just for people that are staying at these places as well. I mean, I think it does great things for tourism. I mean, just to have more music in the area. And going right back to what you said right at the start about where you guys managed to sneak in a couple of hours or not even a couple of hours, a few songs worth of busking before you guys got pulled by the cops in Darwin. I mean, the psychological impact that you can have on people around you just by putting some music in the background, it's so understated because, I mean, you see it everywhere and it's especially now. And I mean, I always reflect back on Sydney and how restricted things are here and what that's done to the entertainment industry and just our social culture here. And it's not a great spot. And I think just to have something where you've got a circuit of resources or places where people can go around and get that creative output to be able to express to other people, but also for people to be staying in these areas and be accompanied by music, it's such a massive, it's a healthy thing for the mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And like we sometimes get the occasional email or message from people. It's mostly circle buskers actually. We've found they're definitely the most territorial kind of artists that we've ever come across.
What are they called?
You know, the circle buskers?
No.
I definitely don't want to point them out because we've met a lot that are unreal, but we have found that we've had, I guess because they can, it's a lot harder for circle buskers to get a space to perform because they require a lot more space.
What are they called? What's an actual circle buskers?
Circle buskers. So they're the buskers that might do the juggling or the fire twirling or those bigger kind of shows, those really big interactive shows. And they're all unreal. They're all phenomenal artists and troubadours and stuff like that. But we have, some have found this quite abrasive before when it comes to, because it's so hard for them to get a pitch and then they think, well, now every man and his dog is going to be out busking.
Mm.
But, you know, this is only going to appeal to those people that would probably find a way of doing it anyway. But we have a bit of a social conscience with this. And so most of the venues that we put up and apply are put up on our website and stuff like that, they're venues that wouldn't normally have a budget for live entertainment.
Mm.
So what we're doing is putting music in a space that wouldn't get music. Not only that, we're not undercutting any other musician because we know how hard it is for musos to get work a lot of the time. So, you know, we try and have that kind of ethical approach to it as well. There's no point oversaturating a place and then maybe a venue thinks they get a clever idea. It's like, oh, why pay a musician when we can just get buskers in?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the cool thing about it is that it's not the be-all and end-all, but it's an amazing starting point for most people that probably don't know where to start. And once you get into the swing of things, then you can see the possibilities and start thinking outside the box to go, you know, okay, so that model works in that aspect. Now, what can I build off that and what other people can I approach to try a similar concept or add a bit more to it where, you know, there might be a little bit more money involved or whatever it is. But, I mean, it really boils down to what you guys have been doing in the sense that you're approaching people, you're asking people, and you're trying something that's not an existing concept or model where, you know, hey, we're musicians, we need money, pay us to play and then we'll go off on our merry way afterwards. It's you're trying a more of a bartering system, and the result of that is that you guys get to travel, you get to talk to people, you get to learn and grow and experience, you know, the country or the world, depending on where you are and everybody around you. So for you guys, and I'm only just making an observation from my side, but obviously the money is important because it keeps you guys going, it keeps you guys alive. But I mean, there's obviously, and it appears to be a bigger aspect to this that you guys are getting just so much more out of it than just trying to find a way of making some money.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned that it works like case by case. That it does. It's definitely an awesome starting point because we've even found now going around the circuit using our own website to remember all the contacts and people that we'd met. Some of it, we were actually, you know, we were on to that next stage. We're on to this stage where for the West Coast, we've had two agencies helping book us gigs. Mm. So it's definitely not something that you have to stick to. It's like do it once and you meet the right people because you put in a lot of the right places or you're just exposed to more people that you wouldn't normally be. And they will lead to the next thing. So right now we're able to afford to rent a place for a while instead of having to live out of a backpackers and play twice a week, which is awesome. But because we did that last time, we were able to meet the right people to move on from that this time. So even just as a stepping stone, I guess I couldn't recommend it enough. It's really well thought for us, I guess. And we made it.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said before, I mean, and you mentioned last night as well, is that, you know, you're giving these resources away to people. You're making it easy to access and free, you know, and as you said before about, you know, other creative people that are very reluctant to give away the secrets or the resources that they have in fear that they'll lose whatever they have. And I mean, it's a very cliche, but the more you give, the more that you get. And I think that you guys have got the right outlook on it where, you know, provide as much as you can to people and in return, in a multitude of different ways, you'll get things back. And it might not just be a financial thing, but it just means more opportunities, which you guys are certainly getting. And just opens the world up.
Definitely comes back.
Yeah.
Sharing definitely comes back, man. So yeah, so far we've done this for 2 years. This is apart from the first time in Sydney where we decided we'd never pay for accommodation again. Fast forward 2 years, we've done 1 month in Singapore, got broke. Very broke because we left without capital. Lived for 5 months in Malaysia, and then we did 2 months in South Africa. Flew back to Melbourne with our tail between our legs, $15 between us and our joint bank account, and then bought a car for $1,500 the day before we left, and drove to Darwin where we are now.
It's incredible. I mean, you mentioned like tail between your legs, but I mean, no doubt. You know, 5 months in Malaysia or 2 months in South Africa to me is even crazier. what you guys would have learnt and experienced, I mean, regardless of coming back with $15 in your bank account, the stuff that you guys would have picked up over that time there would have been incredible.
Yeah, the people that we met, and we were able to play to stay in Malaysia and South Africa and Singapore. We were able to play for our bets. Mm. I've always wanted to travel but never been able to because I've just been a struggling artist,
you
know, playing with a million other people out there. And it's cool that this kind of afforded me the ability to get what I needed to travel. Mm. Malaysia was really funny because we had intended on getting to India by January. India is somewhere I really want to spend a fair bit of time learning and playing music. But we left Melbourne first time around with $800 between us. We just got the car to Kalgoorlie. Slept in the car pretty much the whole way except for one of our friends in Adelaide. Played a few gigs there and then just kind of bumped around. And we ended up first time round when we left Darwin, which is a year ago, we flew out of Darwin to Singapore with about $800 around that mark still. So we didn't. Australia is definitely the best place to make money that we've been so far. Mm. But in saying that, we haven't been to places that have high disposable incomes either.
Yeah.
So we got to Singapore and we paid for our beds and then, we literally ran out of money. We only wanted to spend maybe 2 weeks in Malaysia because we wanted to move on to Thailand, Vietnam, Laos, Myanmar, all those kinds of places. And, we ended up staying for 5 months in Malaysia, in Kuala Lumpur, and we opened a bar, completely illegal, on a rooftop in the city.
It's incredible.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
And is that just from, I guess, from meeting people over there and then discovering, oh, okay, well, there's an opportunity here, even though it's illegal, but to do something, but it's just based on you guys talking and being around, you know, locals over there and just finding an opportunity to make a little bit of extra money.
Yeah. So we had messaged a lot of people in Kuala Lumpur seeing if we could play for our beds or make a video for our bed, and no one got back to us. So we were going to bypass Kuala Lumpur. We thought, oh, we'll stop in for 2 days maybe, and then we'll just go further north. And then the hostel owner that we were staying at, we were staying on his rooftop in Flynets. That was our room, Flynets, on this rooftop. And he's like, I know a guy. He doesn't have an online presence, but he's got a hostel. You can pay to stay there. And we're like, cool. Got to KL, played for 1 week. He'd never had music there. He had a rooftop space that wasn't really utilized. It was just a flat rooftop space that had a few couches and stuff. So over the weeks, we started building up all this momentum, and we were getting backpackers in from other hostels. We were packing out this rooftop, playing on two crates with our busking set up. And he ended up getting a fridge up there. We started putting alcohol in it, and then we were selling beer and running events. We were walking around at the daytime, handing out flyers that we made for this event that we just kind of were having on this rooftop. And, yeah, we were getting locals, we're getting people from couch surfing events, we're getting other musicians from Malaysia, backpackers from everywhere, and then all of a sudden they had this old table, so I made a beer pong stencil thing on it and wrote all the rules because I'd never had beer pong there before. Then they had a dartboard, then they got a slack line, and it just became this really awesome space that people were coming to and playing music and jamming. They were selling beers. I found an old toasted sandwich machine, and I was selling toasted sandwiches in between sets to make more money for five ringgit, which is, $1.50.
Yeah.
So barely making money off it. and that ended up going for about 5 months, and it was awesome. It was awesome. We were doing two shows a week, an open mic night, a movie night. We were even doing Texas Hold'em on Sundays for money.
Wow.
We only won once, I think, so we lost. We poured a bit of money into poker. But it was just this really cool space, and the weekend after we left, a few of the people called us, and they were just showing us on their phone the rooftop space, and it was absolutely dead again.
Yeah.
So I thought that was such a really cool way. I did offer to go with the owner to help him set up just a little cheap PA that we could keep it running. But I thought, how cool is that? We were just in Malaysia, opened up a bar by accident, and we were playing music, and we were connecting all these people and all these locals and everyone. There's all these bars nearby. No one was going to the bars. They're like, this is what I want when I travel. I want a space I can take my shoes off, lay on a couch, drink beers, listen to music, play darts, and just chill.
Yeah.
And music afforded us that opportunity. And we also had another friend, a hitchhiker that we picked up in Australia that we became friends with. He was in Malaysia and he does acro yoga. So then we started running acro yoga workshops during the day. And it,
wow.
It was crazy. It was, I would live on that rooftop if it was like that. But, yeah.
That's insane. I mean, you could write a book just about that venture on its own.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, and just give it a bit of a buzzword title or something like that. How I started an illegal bar in Malaysia or something like that. It'll sell well. But that's so cool. I mean, it just goes back to what you're saying before about, just having to think outside the box and asking questions and looking for opportunities. And sometimes, yeah, okay, it might be a bit more of a risk than normal. But I mean, obviously, you guys you're being resourceful and just trying to find a way just to keep it all flowing. And it's so cool. And I hate using the word, but it's inspiring in the sense that, it just goes to show that anything's possible.
Yeah, man. And there's so many amazing musicians out there. We meet so many amazing musicians on the road, especially while we're traveling, just other backpackers. And with the open mic nights, it's a great opportunity for people to get up and have a strum if they haven't played a guitar for a few months because they've been traveling. And I think to myself, wow, like if I had half of your singing talent or half of your guitar playing talent, or you're an amazing musician and you could totally be utilizing it to make your travel a lot easier. And a lot of guys are like, oh, yeah, I never thought of that. Like you would kill it, man. You would kill it. But it's just one of those things. Like, do you think you can do it or not? Or have you never considered it just because there's not a lot of things out there that might invoke that train of thought that makes you go, oh, I'm going to pay for half of my accommodation and pay for the other half.
Yeah, most people don't think that way. I mean, you just look I mean, I'm like that to a point. I mean, I've only just recently in the last year or so discovered Airbnb, and that's destroyed in a good way my sense of accommodation when I travel around the world. And that's still a pretty posh way of traveling compared to everybody else. And so I think for most people, you just go with what you've been told, you know, over the years. Yeah. and what's available and what you can and can't do. And I mean, you guys have shown that there really is endless possibilities of what the outcome can be and what the possibilities are and opportunities.
Yeah. And like, we're definitely not saying everyone has to do it, but if we can just, you know, even we've had 40-year-old men messages from America saying, you know what, I watched a few of your videos and now I'm busking for the first time in my life. I wish I'd done it 20 years earlier.
That's cool.
And we get other people that are saying, I'm leaving on my journey tomorrow, I watched a few of your videos and now I'm just in the car driving. And, you know, even just for someone to pick up an instrument or to whatever it is they do, or just inspire them to work for themselves a little bit more and develop themselves, opposed to working really hard for someone else and only seeing a little bit of money in return. To get what they need, you know. I guess we're all just trying to, everyone's just trying to make their way.
Absolutely. It just opens people's minds up so much more. And you guys are, in some ways, I mean, you guys aren't the pioneers, so to speak, because there's countless people that have been doing what you guys are doing for a long time. But I think you guys probably are pioneers in the sense that you're really making an effort to document as much as you can and share it with as many people as possible. And I think that's what's going to make and is making what you guys do so valuable. And as more people discover and follow what you both do, I mean, that's just going to be more success, whichever way you define it for you guys, whether that be, you know, financial, whether it be just more of a case of just more opportunities and experiences. I mean, the fact that you guys can, and at this point in time still can, go, all right, well, we're going to travel to this destination, and without any real end date. It's not like buying a return ticket and just going, okay, well, we've only got a week here and then we've got to come back home because we've got to go back to a job or a house or whatever it might be. You guys are, from what I can see anyway, you're going over there and you're just going to play it by ear. You've got a rough idea of what you'd like to do, but you're flexible enough that if things don't quite go to plan, that you go off on a different path.
Yeah, and I guess we are really lucky in that sense that we both don't have wives or children or debt. You know, we're very lucky that we have the freedom to be able to explore it to this level. But in saying that, we do meet a lot of people that have, you know, boxes, one, two, or three, or all of them.
Yeah.
And they're having a try their way. But yeah.
And they can take stuff from what you guys do. I mean, as you said, you're doing it on a level that probably a large percentage of the people out there probably would not be able to do because of all the things that they're committed to at home.
That's
in normal daily life. But there might be certain aspects or even a philosophy that you guys have an approach towards that they can pick out and decide to go, you know what, you know, I can afford to go away for a month instead of a week. You know, it's not because I don't have to spend, you know, X thousands of dollars on a hotel. I can do something where I can pass on my creativity to other people and in turn be able to stay in a place longer and discover a part of the world that I normally wouldn't be able to. So, yeah, even just small little things that you guys are being able to demonstrate will be so valuable for other people. So, yeah, it's amazing.
Thanks, man. So another really crazy story is George's brother was doing some work in South Africa. He's an actor, and he was shooting over there. And he's pretty good to us. I guess a lot of people have said to us in the past, you know, you guys should crowdfund what you're doing, or you should do a Kickstarter and all that kind of stuff. And I really feel like that we'd lose a lot of authenticity by crowdfunding our travels. Mm. There's some travel bloggers that do crowdfund it, and they do ask people to crowdfund their holiday and whatever it is they do, and or their blog or their series or whatever. But we feel like we would lose authenticity if people were to see that we were getting money. This is why we don't also monetize the website.
Mm.
Is because we, you know, a lot of people could argue that it's stupid and whatever else, but we we feel like it comes across a lot more organically. If we're able to pull it off this way, off our own resourcefulness, then that's really cool. And it also helps prove the point that it is possible if you want to take it to this level. But we ended up going to South Africa, and where George's brother was working. And he's like, oh, you guys have to come to this party. We're like, yeah, cool. You know, we're not doing anything, obviously, because we've got no money. So we ended up getting in this cab, and we were driving up to this house. And when I say house, it's an understatement of its size on every level. Mm-hmm. And it looked really familiar, and it looked exactly like Tony Stark's house from Iron Man 1. Yeah. And turns out the house from Iron Man 1 was modeled off this house that we were going to have a party at. Yeah. So we were, George and I were, rocking up. This is South Africa, right? So you rock up to the gates of the house. There's armed guards with automatic machine guns.
Oh, yeah.
Just looking at us, and they wave us in, close the gate behind us, and go up this massive driveway, and there's this house is just blaring music. That we got out of the cab, walked upstairs, this bar. It looked like just the most classiest bar overlooking Camps Bay, which is, you know, really stunning country just behind Table Mountain. And it is full of models and very wealthy people and both. You know, they're either one or the other or both. And we're just cruising in our flip-flops and our shorts and a little bit unshaven, hair's a bit messy. We did try and tidy up a bit, but we didn't realise this was the kind of place we were going to. And we were waiting at the bar, waiting. And we're like, is there a bartender or something? Like, no, you just go help yourself. All right, jump over the other side of the bar, pulling beers out, pulling spirits out, making drinks. There's just beautiful people everywhere. Like, beautiful in the cosmetic sense. I'm sure some of them are actually really nice as well. And Luke's like, hey, do you want to check out this garage? I'm like, yeah, sure. And we walked out. We're walking downstairs. You know that glass area, like in Iron Man? We're walking along this glass floor, and he's like, look down. And we're walking above the garage, and it's just full of Ferrari. Like, full. Like, I've never seen any, like, it was like a showroom of Ferraris. I'm thinking, who needs this many Ferraris? Fucking hell. And you have a lot of money, buy a different type of car. Or a couple of different types, but I suppose if you have a lot of money, you just buy what you want, right?
Yeah.
But it was amazing. Like, this house was just off its head. I've never stood anywhere so expensive, probably. And we're just two buskers in off the street, really. You know, we just knew one guy who knew one guy who knew this party was going on. And apparently this party doesn't stop. It's just 24 hours. There's people coming in and out from all over the world that are all, like, you know, rich and successful or model actors kind of things. But the really strange thing was the contrast between it all, because over the other side of Table Mountain is just hundreds of thousands of displaced people in their townships. And I'm looking down under my feet at pretty much a showroom of Ferraris, just drinking this alcohol. I don't know what's going on. I don't know how I got here. And then over the other side is just like disparity. It's just crazy.
Puts things into perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Or if anything, like, the other way.
yeah, full on. But, oh, my God, I couldn't believe just the house we're in. And then literally, you know, 2Ks over the hill. It's just
another world.
They have nothing.
Yeah.
So it was really, really, really cool to visit it. And, you know, it was awesome to see all that stuff and meet. Like, there were some really cool people there. Even the guy that his father owned the house, we got chatting to him, and he was really cool, really laid back. And he just throws these parties for people to have a good time and stuff. And he was walking around with the bin picking up bottles. I'm like, he could afford a million butlers. But I thought that was really cool that he was walking around putting the bottles in a bin. You know, maybe it kind of kept him grounded a bit and stuff. And,
and
it ended up being a pretty, pretty wild night.
Wow.
But it's just, you end up in some pretty crazy places.
Well, that's it.
And you see some crazy things, you know, the contrast in South Africa. Like anywhere, you know, you could argue somewhere, a nice suburb in Sydney to going remote in Australia. You could argue that there's a smaller apartheid in Australia in some places.
Yeah.
But you do see some crazy things that really just put you in your place.
Well, definitely. Definitely, gives you more of a sense of awareness of people around you and probably your spot in the grand scheme of things as well. I mean, you know, the people that are usually so ignorant and closed-minded are usually the ones that have never got out of their local town or their local suburb and experienced what a different way of life is. And for you guys to be able to go to these different parts of the world and across the country and see both ends of the spectrum, seeing the glamorous and the overabundance of wealth and whatnot, and then going to the other end and seeing and experiencing, you know, DIY and people that have no choice but to be resourceful and try and make ends meet with very little. Yeah. It gives, I'm only assuming, but it gives you guys so much more wealth personally and your own characters to be open-minded and respectful and compassionate for other people.
Yeah, it's funny how we all live in different worlds, but we all live on the same world. It's that perspective really kind of, you separate so much from what you think is important, what isn't, but it's all so connected. Mm. But you know, and I guess there's a lot of different ways to discover that, and I guess there's a lot of different ways to not have to deal with that also, which I think can be pretty sad for some people, especially the ones that are born into, you know, an ideal situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, for you guys, what you've done and no doubt what you guys will do in the future as well, I mean, just that aspect alone of the humanity side of things and discovering yourselves and where you guys fit into the cog of life and seeing people around you. I mean, it's just, I'm sure there's a lot of things that you guys will be able to do that will help expose a lot of that to more and more people over time. So it's really cool. I mean, my mind's just racing. I'm thinking of all these like cool ideas and thinking, oh, if I was in your shoes, I'd be doing this and this and this. Man. And I'm thinking all these things, and I'll harass you afterwards and give you all these things, and then you can tell me if they're crap or not. But it's just so exciting that, I mean, you guys are just doing stuff that a lot of people would probably dream or fantasize about. And to be honest, what I think the big message that you've said is that you don't need to wait until the perfect moment. You don't need to wait until you've obtained a certain amount of skills or a certain amount of capital to get started. You just need to get started and just give it a shot.
That's it, man. Yeah. And that's with anything, you know.
Yep.
Everyone's always going to be having birthdays. Everyone's always going to be getting married or having kids or whatever else. There are important things that you need to be around for. Every time I've come back from Melbourne, I've come back because there's been a wedding on. So two of my best mates have been married, and like, they're the last two weddings I'm ever going to. Mm. You know, I come back with nothing and go to these weddings, but I do miss out a lot. But there is no time where something isn't going on. There's no flat period where you're like, well, no one's doing anything important, so I'm going to go and try and do whatever it is I've always wanted to do now. I think it is just convincing yourself that the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is right now. So,
I love it. So, I guess now, so you're in Darwin for a few more weeks, and then you head back down towards Perth. So, for anybody who's listening who's not from Australia, go and look at that on a map, and you'll see how far those two points are from Perth to Darwin.
It's a fair drive.
So, what's the next 6 months or the next 12 months look like for the both of you?
Cool. So the reason why we're going back to Perth and not flying out from Darwin this time is because we need to go do some interviews for some UK visas.
Okay.
So originally the plan was, but it's getting a little bit too late now in the year, we were going to walk the Camino in Spain. And if not many people are sure what that is, it's the Camino de Santiago. And it's an 800-kilometre walk that the pilgrims used to do, I think from the south of Spain to the border of Spain and France. And essentially, there's this really cool book that's kind of written about it called the Pilgrimage. I can't remember who the author is exactly. He's the same guy who wrote... Oh, 2 seconds. Sorry, mate.
No, that's all right. I'm looking as well.
it's such an awesome book.
The Pilgrimage by... Is it Paulo Coelho? Yeah. Coelho? I'll put a link up so people can check it out. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. So we wanted to do that, and it's a very popular walk. And we just wanted to film and busk it. So a big part of our content isn't us. Who wants to watch us play all day, especially when we're not that great? We thought there's a lot of musicians out there in the world that are traveling or still. So whenever we come across them, it would be great to film a song and hear their story and their take on busking or their take on music or just their take on travel or their take on whatever it is they want to talk about, you know. So we wanted to film and busk the Camino and just add that to the web series. But it's looking like it might get a bit cold. And the reason why we're going to walk the Camino, sorry, tiny little offshoot, but when we were in Malaysia, we met a young bloke. His name was Olayo, and he was 17 years old when we met him. His parents are French, but he was born in Spain. Now, he, as a 17-year-old, rode on a push bike on his own 6,500 kilometres from France to Iran.
Wow.
Through the Middle East, France to Iran. He flew to Malaysia when it was too cold in Iran to ride. Turned 18, we threw in the biggest party ever on the rooftop of a bar that we somehow owned. Not owned, but, you know, running. Yeah. And then when it warmed up again, he rode from Iran to West China, I think another 6,500 Ks.
Wow.
Before flying back to Spain. And we were like, this is an old soul right here. This is the coolest 17-year-old I've ever met, who's just ridden through some of the parts that they're led to believe no one should ever go because they're just crazy and want to hurt you and kill you and whatever else.
What's this guy's name?
Sorry?
What's this guy's name?
Olayo. I'll send you a link.
Yeah.
After this to him because he's an amazing guy. And his English is pretty good. He speaks a few different languages as they do, but I can put you in contact with him or at least show you his Facebook where he's an incredible young man. And his parents are cyclists and they sent him out. And after the first day, he was telling me, I called them and I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. And they're like, ride, boy, just go. And he said he never looked back. So we were going to go to Spain to see him because we had this running joke about Olayo's mum's spaghetti. So we're like, all right, when we leave Australia next, let's go to Spain and eat Olayo's mum's spaghetti. And that was the whole reason for going to Spain. And then we thought, oh, maybe we should make it a little bit bigger than that and do the Camino while we're in the area. But it's getting a bit cold, so we need to get back to Perth to do interviews for our youth mobility visas. I'm 29 now, so it's coming to the end of the time I can apply for that.
Okay.
Before visas get a little bit harder for me to stay in the UK.
Yep.
And the idea is to travel around the UK and Europe for 2 years and essentially do what we're doing here. Mm. Just try and busk, try and play music, try and meet people. We have no real place where we think we will be based. It'll just be wherever we can kind of start making things work.
Yeah.
Then we'll just go from there. So the plan back to Perth, probably won't have a lot of money. We wanted to have a lot of money saved, but as you earn money, somehow you spend money. I'm so much better being poor than I am with having anything in my bank account.
That's funny, isn't it?
it's just relative. I can't seem to defeat it. I don't think we can. and then I guess the UK, Europe for a few years and we'll try and build the Buskers Guide into a more community based resource because we obviously can't learn everything about playing music everywhere. Things change so they need to constantly be updated.
Mm.
And as we're starting to write original tracks now, we want to start separating ourselves as musicians from the resource.
Yep.
So the resource can, like, if it ever comes to a point where we're outgrown it or what we're doing doesn't fit into the theme of the Buskers Guide, then we can see that and say, okay, cool, this is awesome. Maybe some new people who want to film web series about them busking around the world can start adding to it or a whole bunch of people can start filming and adding and all that kind of stuff, and just try and build that really cool resource that everybody can use and tap into for the benefit of everybody. And then I guess go back into original music after playing covers to earn the crust for so long.
That's cool. There's definitely a bigger picture to what you guys are doing, which is awesome. I mean, Buskers Guide can be just one small aspect of what you guys are planning to. to achieve or create and whatnot. It's just one little offshoot over time. So it's, far out. 2 years in Europe, that'd be, I'm envious just at the thought of it.
Yeah, it's really cool. I've never been to Europe before. Like, I haven't travelled until I started doing this. So I'm so fulfilled and in love with what I'm doing right now because it's just showing me so many things that I don't think I ever could have had my shit together enough and to afford a 2 week trip to Europe. You know?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you're lucky because you haven't travelled until you've done this. You're seeing everything with fresh eyes anyway, which most people. I mean, I remember the first time I went to Europe and, you know, we were touring and playing, you know, music in a band and whatnot. So we're staying in hotels and, you know, the typical traveling around airports and whatnot. But I mean, even that for me with fresh eyes at that stage, my world just opened up. I just realized, wow, there's just so much more. But I mean, for yourself and what you've been able to see so far, on a level that's just so different to what most people would experience. I mean, you just learn so much more. You just take away so much. So I think for you, when you do eventually get over to Europe and you start your 2 year journey, just seeing it from a perspective that most people won't, will just, I can't even begin to imagine how great that would be.
I'm so excited. It's always just been my dream to just travel and play music. And now that I swapped around which one I should do first to make the other one happen. It's been pretty incredible.
That's cool. Well, I think the big thing is just make sure you guys keep sharing it with everyone else, and hopefully a lot of other people will be inspired to do something, even if it's a small percentage of what you guys have been doing or will be doing.
You know, if someone just picks up the guitar again after not touching it for 10 years or whatever it is, you know, then we've succeeded. But we've completely succeeded.
That's cool. Awesome. Well, I think I'm looking at the time now, and I know that you've probably got some practicing to do. Are you playing tonight at all?
We're not playing tonight. It was a night off, which is good. I love playing. We're thinking about going out and having a busk. There's a few markets here. We probably won't busk on the with Darwin's permit system because I'd hate to validate it because I feel like it's an absolute disservice to hardworking musicians and people that are trying to go out and earn their money their way. So we're trying to do some recording at the moment, which is just dodgy, you know, room recordings. It's a start just to sell demos. I've got to service the car. I guess traveling's been cool in one sense because it's forced me to learn a lot more about the world around me. And now we're servicing our own cars, and which probably isn't, you know, hard for a lot of people. For some people, it's, you know, oh, well, I've got to service a car. I don't even know where to start kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have a crack at that so we can get it back to Perth and then sell it before we head overseas. Yeah, other than that, and game development. I thought it'd be really cool. This is just like a random brain fart, but I've got like a really solid theme planned out and in my head for the original act, Bonsai Beast. And I watch a lot of anime and do a lot of gaming because it's a great way to save money when you're traveling because, you know, backpackers, they'll convince you to go out every night of the week if they can.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know where they get their money to drink. They don't have any money to eat. You see them eating the worst food you've ever seen anybody eat in hostels, but they go out every night and get pissed. I want to start, you know, writing a cool thing for a game and maybe a graphic novel or an anime or something like that and try and base the characters on you know, just traveling musicians and you know, I don't know, just I guess try and get all those creative things out of me and see what works and see what I can kind of tie in with music and something that's a bit different and cool to release with music.
But that's awesome.
Yeah, I guess brainstorming.
Well, you're not
tough life.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You're not short of ideas, which is pretty exciting. So yeah, that's cool, man. That's awesome. Well, I might have to do a follow-up sometime down the track, maybe just before you guys head off to Europe or when you're over there or who knows what will happen, but we'll definitely have to check in again and see how you're both doing because there's certainly a lot coming up for the both of you.
Yeah, absolutely love to, man. Thank you so much for having me.
No worries at all. All right, well, we'll keep in touch. And, thanks so much for awakening and having a chat on a Sunday morning. I'm sure that, as you said, there's always things to do, but appreciate the time that you've taken.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care, man. Thanks, everyone. Hope you enjoyed that chat with Josh. If you want to make contact with Josh or his friend George, you can reach out to them via the links that I have in my show notes and on andysocial.net. Alternatively, you can go straight to Facebook and search for The Buskers Guide. You'll find all their details there, and also thebuskersguide.com. It's as you would have heard in the conversation, they're just doing some really amazing things, and it's quite exciting and inspiring to see the possibilities that lay ahead for them as well. This is not just about busking, of course, as we spoke about. It's just there's so much of a philosophy around this and a way of life and something that just opens our minds up to more ways of living. And it's just it's incredible, and the opportunities are truly endless. So I definitely encourage you to reach out and say hello and let them know what you think of what they're doing and this podcast episode, of course. And then we'll play it by ear and touch base with them later on down the track as things continue to progress for them, if I can spit all that out. Before we wrap things up, very quickly, some final housekeeping. As mentioned at the start of the podcast, the Amazon portal link on andysocial.net is probably the best way to directly support this podcast in a financial sense. So just to quickly brush over that again, if you do shop on Amazon regularly, you can click on the Amazon portal link on my website, which takes you straight to Amazon. Your shopping experience does not change. It's exactly the same as normal. The only difference is that you've used a slightly different unique link to get to that page, which then tracks your order and gives me a very small percentage of what you end up purchasing. So while it is very, very small, it does help, and the money comes back to me to help fund what I do. I have a lot of expenses, not a lot. That's a complete lie. I do have some expenses each month with regards to podcast hosting and web hosting. I've also upgraded my gear, including new microphones. So I'm not sure if anybody notices a slight difference in quality. Hopefully it's better because I spent a bit of money on these mics. But the money that comes from things such as that do come back and just help me in the hope of covering all costs down the track of what the outlay is per month to keep this thing going. It's a labor of love. It's not something that I'm hoping will become a job or my main source of income. I'm not that deluded, but it's just a fun hobby, and I'd love to be able to not have it compromised in any way from a financial point of view. So if there is a way, and if you do shop regularly on Amazon, if you don't want to click on andysocial.net and just copy, do a right click of the link from my website and save it into your browser favorites, and bookmark the link, I should say, for a different way of the different lingo. That'll be huge. It's a small thing, but it goes a long way, especially if there's enough of you guys doing it. And on that note, a huge thanks to the people that have been using it so far. It's only been up for a couple of months now, or not even, and it's cool to see a little bit of money coming back towards me. And I'm hoping that over time, as I said, that will eventually get to a point where it just covers all my monthly expenses for the podcast. It's a really cool concept, something I'm not used to, and it feels weird to ask for money, but it's kind of not. I mean, you guys aren't spending any extra money. You're shopping as per normal on Amazon, which is a great place to buy pretty much anything and everything. Amazon reward me for directing you guys to them. So, that's there. Quickly, because I know I'm rambling, if you're not an Amazon shopper, other ways to support this podcast, which are so much easier, is simply sharing links, liking, commenting, any way of interacting on social media with the podcast goes a long way. If it's a retweet or a like or one of the little love hearts on Instagram or whatever it might be, it all helps. It all helps get the word out there to more people. And any way that you guys can spread the word is just massive for me. So I do thank all those people that I do see actively telling other people about the podcast and recommending episodes. And for the people that have been reaching out to me over the last couple of weeks asking what the hell's going on because I haven't been putting episodes out, thank you so much for caring. It's nice to know that the podcast has been missed, and just due to everything going on at the moment, it's unfortunately suffered over the last couple of weeks. So I will be aiming to get things back into full swing. I'm going to try and get a surplus of episodes backed up before things really start to get crazy, because I'm more or less going to be out of the country for the most part of 2 months coming up. So I will be recording episodes while I'm away, but I want to make sure that there's still episodes coming out each week for you guys as well. So this is one of many to come. And as always, I just thank you so much for listening and supporting, and just all the positive feedback and even the constructive criticism. It's just amazing to get that that interaction from you guys, and I can't thank you all enough. So enough of my dribble. There'll be another episode coming out soon. Hopefully by the time this airs, it'll be in the next week. If you're listening to this in the future, hello from the past, and we'll speak soon. Thanks, everyone. Bye.